Good morning, and thank you for joining in Conversation with Rashmi on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. My guest in studio this morning is Maria Brennan and Lindsay Ford. But my first guest for this morning to begin the show is Maria Brennan. She is an occupational therapist at CBI Kitchener, Victoria. Originally from St. John's, she moved to Waterloo in February of 2017. And Maria describes her career and life journey as one that has taken her all over the map and ultimately away from home. Maria loves what she does and looks forward to opportunities to share how she got to this point of helping people of all walks of life get better to living through work at CBI. So thank you so much, Maria, for joining me in studio this morning. It's an absolute pleasure having you here.
Thank you for having me.
So, all the way from St. John's. Mm-hmm. Let's begin there. What brought you to Waterloo?
Okay, so I did my bachelor's of kinesiology there at Memorial University, and I graduated in April of 2014. So at the time, we had done a co-op presentation, and an OT had come in, and I said, wow, like what she does seems really fascinating. It's not just focusing on the physical injuries, but it's more of a holistic approach. And so when I looked into it more, I found out that the closest occupational therapy school was actually in Nova Scotia. So no matter what, if I wanted to pursue that or physio, I'd have to go away. Mm-hmm. However, I consider myself a well-rounded student, so my GPA wasn't like amazing. The school in Nova Scotia only took 8 people from Newfoundland, like there were seats reserved. Mm-hmm. So I said, I don't really know if that's going to pan out. So a university from Glasgow in Scotland came to my university, mm-hmm. and did recruitment seminars and interviews. And I met with them and I kind of really got a good vibe from them. And then in April, once I graduated, they had informed me that I had gotten accepted to their Masters of OT program in Scotland. Nice. So that was all great. And I had just met my now husband at the time a month before. And we said, let's see what happens. And I moved there and he moved out West Alberta. And we just kind of figured it out. Uh-huh. So I went there for 2 years and did that. And then I moved back to St. John's to kind of figure out my next move, where we're going to go from here and settle. And then my husband previously lived in Waterloo, so we said, let's just give it a shot. You know, we need to find some work. Mm-hmm. And so we've been here ever since.
And being in Waterloo now, mm-hmm. it's a nice small community-driven city.
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic that it's called Waterloo and I can't find any water anywhere, but I mean, I really do like the community. We have lots of family here. We have lots of friends here. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're a really central point to family and friends that don't necessarily live in KW. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really great opportunity for us both to kind of start our lives together somewhere fresh. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so here we are.
That's great. So you have specialized with clients or in what you've done as an occupational therapist, mm-hmm. in concussions, and you deal with clients who come in with mm-hmm. concussions, which mm-hmm. is a challenge in itself. So just to help our listeners understand and help me understand as well, what is a concussion to begin with?
Okay, so concussions and the term mild traumatic brain injury are often used interchangeably in the literature. Mm-hmm. Essentially, a concussion is when you get a blow to the head, or you can also get symptoms from whiplash that are very similar to concussion as well. It's not anything that will ever show up on, you know, x-rays or CTs or MRIs. The structural changes are quite small. Mm-hmm. However, the effects can be quite devastating depending on the severity. There's a lot of pre-existing things that can be into play, like previous concussions, mental health, like pre-existing mental health, you know, your physical fitness, your mm-hmm. activity, like what you do for a living. Like there's all these through the research, which again mm-hmm. is also, it's up and coming, but there's still a lot left to be discovered. Mm-hmm. We're figuring out a lot of predetermining factors that can kind of make you more susceptible to concussion symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And what one person goes through, it's not necessary those symptoms are the same for every single mm-mm. person.
definitely not. Some people will have symptoms within and resolve within a couple of days. Some people a couple of weeks, 4 weeks. I'd say the majority of people do resolve within the first 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. But then after that, you can have those persistent post-concussion symptoms, which is kind of all that I see at this point, because where in my work, I'm more so focused with, yes, people may have had a concussion, and I don't really look too much at the diagnosis itself, but whether, like, how is that impacting their life? Mm-hmm. Like, how are they functioning? Are they not doing things they were doing before? So I typically see people past that 4 week mark. Mm-hmm. It could be 3 months, could be a year. I've seen people up to 2 years following concussion that have maybe not returned to work, or are finding that they still can't think properly, mm-hmm. or are still having vision problems. So it kind of varies from person to person, depending on multiple factors.
What are the kind of symptoms that, you know, determines, mm-hmm. okay, this is what a concussion could be?
Okay. So like, once you think you have a concussion, you should go see your primary health provider immediately, just to get that conversation going. And the Ontario Neurotrauma Foundation has very clear guidelines and like patient-friendly guidelines as to what to do. But typically, the initial symptoms are headache, nausea, sleep disturbances, visual disturbances, so like blurry vision or your eyes not converging properly. Like for example, if you were to hold your finger out away from your nose and then bring it to your nose, that's when your eyes converge. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't do that properly. Taking longer to think, increased anxiety and depression. So the symptoms typically fall in like a physical, behavioral, emotional, cognitive, so people like short-term memory, poor attention, mm-hmm. all those little things are a bit of red flag, but I'd say the biggest ones are, you know, headache, nausea, taking longer to think, visual mm-hmm. issues, like go see someone kind of right away.
Yeah, like I've talked to a couple of people mm-hmm. because I've had a concussion, mm-hmm. you know that. Yeah. And they've said it's been 7 years and they still have the symptoms even after 7 years. Mm-hmm. Like, that is mind-boggling for me, yeah. because I had assumed, even with myself, that, you know, okay, a couple of weeks and I'll be fine. Yep. But it's been a while, and 7 years is a long time to deal with it, right?
Yeah, 100%. Like,
so what are the danger signs that people have to kind of, is a red flag, besides, mm-hmm. you know, having those headaches?
So the biggest, so this is kind of where my research, what I found was that the biggest role for OT is education. So a lot of times, for example, I did some baseline concussion testing for Waterloo Minor Hockey, and a parent came in and he didn't understand why his son had to do this baseline testing, because when he was a kid, he didn't have to do it. And concussions are blah, blah, like, you know, blah, 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 not real. Right. So, it was a lot of education because we don't know a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times people after a concussion won't take the proper steps necessary to recover. And therefore their systems persist beyond the 4 weeks, beyond the year, to almost 7 years. Mm-hmm. And once it gets to be a certain point, that person has lost so much of themselves that down the road, it does turn into a big mental health issue. Because when we talk about grief and loss, it's not just, you know, with someone passing away in our immediate circle. It's loss of roles, loss of tasks. You know, people can't work. They mm-hmm. can't think as good. So, like, they're thinking about all these things that they've lost. And so not only do the symptoms persist, but these psychological effects really kind of feed into that as well. Absolutely. And make it, and it kind of exacerbate mm-hmm. The post-concussion symptoms years down the road.
So when you deal with clients, as an OT for yourself, mm-hmm. you see a spectrum of clients that come in and have these symptoms. How does that affect you as an OT there? Because you're seeing various different spectrums and emotions that they go through with it, right? So how does that play a part in mm-hmm. what you do?
So I'd say the main things that I focus on are sleep. So we look at sleep hygiene, and a lot of people are like, what the heck is sleep hygiene? but there's definitely things you can do to prevent poor sleep, because that is a main symptom of concussion, you know, poor sleep quality, not getting enough sleep, waking up in the middle of the night, or not being able to fall asleep. So there's certain things that you can do that I educate people about. So that's one of them. And then sleep impacts your mood. So the next thing I look at is mood management strategies. So, you know, after concussion, their anxiety and depression's high. Like, they're going through a multitude of emotions. So we teach things like progressive muscle relaxation, box breathing, body scanning, kind of just getting them to check in with their mood and with their self and identify those triggers. A lot of education around planning and pacing. So as a society, we are very task oriented. You know, we want to finish. We want to finish that paper. We want to finish the dishes. We want to finish the laundry. However, after concussion, your tendency should shift from being task oriented to time oriented. So I teach people about planning and pacing with respect to times and implementing rest breaks preventatively. Like, you don't want to go until you feel a headache coming on or you feel that nausea coming on. You want to go for a little bit and stop before that happens. Okay. So we teach a lot about sleep, mood management, planning and pacing, and a lot of goal setting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are like, goal setting? I haven't done that since I was a kid. But it's really, we've seen the effects of people who don't set goals and people who do. And the goals can be anything from, I'm going to go to my kid's hockey game in that arena with all those bright lights and all that noise, which are very difficult on a concussion. Noise sensitivity, light sensitivity, it's huge. That could be the goal. And then we kind of alter our treatment to get that person to that point. Because then, if they don't get to that hockey game, that takes an effect on their mental health.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So with people who suffer all these issues, right, the people surrounding them, that plays a huge role as well. Because, you know, not many people understand what this person is going through. So how does the person dealing with it, you know, that can affect their mental health as well in how the people around them respond.
Yeah.
So how is that tackled?
For sure. So I really encourage effective communication. Like, a lot of people have a really tough exterior. They want to be tough for their husbands, their wives, their kids, their families, and their friends. And they want to pretend that everything is okay. But I really work on with people is to get that conversation going of, yes, I look okay. It may not seem like anything's wrong, but I am dealing with this. And so start that, set the expectation right away so that if something, if you should, you know, maybe snap, because irritability is a symptom of concussion, if you should snap unexpectedly and that person is kind of put off by that behavior, they know that you're dealing with something. So I really push the communication that, you know, I'm having a good day, I'm having a bad day, this is where my head is at. I also encourage family members to come to our OT sessions as well. Again, like I said before, education is huge. A lot of people don't understand concussions. You know, research articles come out every day that kind of talk something, maybe contradict something that we once thought 5 to 10 years ago. Absolutely. So it's really important that people are educated about concussions, because I'm sure if I had, you know, went to my own mom and I said, and maybe she got a concussion, she'd probably go and sit in a dark room for, you know, days on end, because that's what we once did. That's what one was once told to do. You know, don't sleep. Don't let the person sleep. You have to keep an eye on their breathing at all times. So there was all this way of thinking of what we thought at the time, but now we really just need to keep educated on what's the most current research. So family coming to sessions, getting that dialogue going of, you know, what are you experiencing? Because you may not be experiencing all of the symptoms. And a lot of times with respect to, say, work, I'll work on a little bit of like a script or a blurb or something with the person, because again, with taking longer to think, poor concentration, you know, memory deficits, it's really hard to articulate what the person wants to say. So we work on that, you know, that catchphrase of when someone asks, oh, how are you doing? Well, I'm not fine, but I'm coping. So we kind of work out ways that work for them to kind of get that point across.
and how true this is, but I've heard was that, you know, women seem to recover longer than men when they have these concussions. So is that true?
It could be true in the sense that, and I can only speak from, you know, roles and pre-existing conditions, but women, we're very emotional beings, shall we say, and as are men. However, I feel like after a concussion, and the women do take on a lot of different roles and responsibilities, say within the household, or maybe at work, they are like the only woman in their office, so they need to kind of keep up that appearance. So I think there is a component of needing to perform and not looking, you know, weak. And so the planning and pacing maybe goes out the window because they feel fine one day. And I've seen this all the time. They go, they're planning and pacing well, and they're fine one day, and they go, and they'll go for a 10K walk. They'll go answer, you know, 2 hours worth of emails, and then they're out of commission for the next week or two. So I think it's just that understanding of it's okay to not be okay. It's okay, you know, if you're, you know, one of the moms I used to see, for example, she used to cook these elaborate meals, and she's like, Maria, you know, the kids are eating grilled cheeses. And I said, that's fine. Like, you're still fulfilling that role, maybe not to the level that you were before. So sometimes it's just that feeling of, you know, not performing well enough or not doing well enough that that can contribute to the prolonged recovery time for women.
And CBI has different programs that they do as well, besides just dealing with occupational therapy and concussions. So what are the different programs that people can, you know, look into at CBI?
So at CBI as a whole, so the CBI Health Group is nationwide. So under that umbrella, we have our rehabilitation, like outpatient network, which is where I work, the health center. And then there's our Monarch House, which helps people with developmental disabilities and behavior issues. Then we have our assessments division. We have our home health division. We have workplace solutions, which looks at like ergonomics and things like that. So there's six different sort of branches of CBI. At the health center, the so we have the one on Kitchener, Victoria, and then there's two other ones. In the Kitchener area, and there's one in Cambridge, and then they also span across the province and across the country. We have physiotherapy, chiropractor care, psychotherapy, OT, kinesiology, and the list kind of goes on depending on the clinic that you're in. And so we service, you know, private clients who have, you know, maybe were injured, the kid was injured on the soccer field, sprained his ankle. That's something that we do there. People have been injured in car accidents. That's a huge bulk of the caseload for sure. And that could encompass concussions as well. We do a lot of work with WSIB and now their new neurology specialty program for concussion clients who are not recovering within typical time frames. And we do work with people who are off on long-term disability to get them back to where, get them back to work. And I think the big thing that people need to realize about occupational therapy is that people come in, they're like, oh, you're the girl who sends me back to work. I said, well, no, like that may be true. However, the word occupational in terms of occupational therapy means everything that you do that occupies your time, your daily occupations. And so for the majority of the population, that is work. That's what we do.
True.
Yeah. So we're just looking at meaningful occupations. And so if you're retired and you and your meaningful occupations are golf and volunteering your grandson's hockey team and things like that, that's the stuff that we're going to get you back to. So it's not just send you back to work. It's getting you back to life, getting to back to what you find meaningful. I once read a quote about OT and someone quoted it as it's where science, creativity, and compassion collide.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree anymore.
I really like that.
Yes, that's a nice quote. And when people have to deal with whatever they're dealing, and some people are not really ready to go back and do what they need to, do you have a place where they can go and seek help with, you know, mental health, or is that something that CBI has in place already?
So that is sort of what myself and the psychotherapists do. Sometimes they aren't ready. You're right. Sometimes it's a confidence thing. And so through, you know, weekly or twice a week sessions with myself, we work on building the confidence, building on that assertive communication, building up on that feelings of self-worth. And we have programs such as like a work hardening program, mm-hmm. where people will come in a couple of times, 2 to 3 times a week for 2 to 4 hours a day doing work simulation tasks, mm-hmm. just to show them that they can actually do it. And when they do it, they're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea I was capable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so we coach people and we try to stay alongside, parallel with them, sure. on like where we think they're at in terms mm-hmm. of their recovery. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of times towards the end of however many weeks that they've been seeing me, it's more so that they are ready. They just don't know it yet. Mm-hmm. And we kind of build on those skills and get them back to where they need to be.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Great. And where can people find information on CBI, or where can they reach out if they need to mm-hmm. contact
yeah.
for treatments and stuff?
So our general website that has all of our locations and contact information is www.cbi.ca. There's also a new Facebook page for my clinic, CBI Kitchener Victoria. And you can always give us a call or shoot us a message on the Facebook page or call our central business office. All those information is on the general website. Okay. And if you want to stop in, we're on top of the urgent care clinic on Kitchener, Victoria.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Maria. It was wonderful chatting with you. And we now know a lot more about concussions, people, how they get affected differently, and it's not the same for every person. So thank you mm-hmm. so much for sharing this information and coming in this morning. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. My next guest is going to talk about everything you need to know about parenting. So stay tuned. I'll be right back. For those of you who have just tuned in, you are listening to In Conversation with Rashmi on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. My next guest, Lindsay Ford, is a parenting coach certified in positive discipline who helps struggling parents build cooperation in their young children and restore peace back into their homes. She teaches parents to see emotions under the misbehavior and identify effective strategies that fit their family. She helps parents overcome hitting, biting tantrums, picky eating, not listening, strong-willed temperaments, name-calling, and anything that causes conflict and tension. Lindsay is also a member of the Positive Discipline Association, and she's been featured in Mind Body Green Motherly Holistic Parent magazine and is a part of the Thrive Global Contributing Community, where she shares her parenting wisdom at thinkfeeldecide.com. So thank you so much, Lindsay, for coming in. It's a pleasure to have you in studio this morning.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So parenting is such a vast topic.
Yes.
So before I even start, what inspired you to become a parenting coach?
I actually just kind of stumbled into it based on my own parenting experience. So when I was on maternity leave with my daughter, so she was my first, I started a blog just because I needed an outlet. I was just discovering so much about myself and about her. She was pretty, it's such an intelligent human being to watch. And so I started my website then. And then sort of around the year and a half mark, I had been operating on intuition basically up until that point. And then all of a sudden I felt like I was in over my head. I had no idea what I was doing. There was all sorts of behavior coming out. Mm-hmm. And I discovered positive discipline. And I ended up getting certified just to add some credibility to what I was sharing on my blog. And part of my certification involved teaching a parenting workshop. Mm-hmm. So I collected my mommy friends and I had a wine night, and I taught at my very first parenting workshop, and I found I just loved it. So I continued to do that, and then branched out into one-on-one coaching, and I have an online course now. So it just sort of evolved, and I stumbled into it basically trying to fulfill my own need first.
That's amazing. Parenting is one of the most important job I think anyone could have,
yes.
right? And it's a plate full right there. So you don't want to do anything that scares kids
right
in life. So how does parenting itself evolve? We beat ourselves up if things don't go mm-hmm. the way it's supposed to go. Where do parents say, okay, it's okay to keep doing what we do and still not go on that guilt trip? Because the guilt is huge.
The guilt is huge. I use this to reassure myself is, you know, chances are you're going to screw up something with your child. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that you're doing it intentionally or something has gone wrong. But I love Brené Brown's message that we are hardwired for struggle and we're not meant to live this perfect life where nothing bad ever happens. Mm-hmm. And certainly as a parent, we have this instinct to protect our kids and keep them safe and we want to keep them happy. But realistically, they need to go through the ups and downs. They need to experience, broken hearts, struggles with friends, conflict with parents. That's how they grow and evolve as a person. So trying to put that in, like keep that perspective in mind. So even if you as a parent feel like you've done something wrong or you made a mistake in your discipline or you've really yelled at your kids and scared them, you know, that's a great learning opportunity. It shows that you are imperfect and it demonstrates to your child that it's okay to screw up mm-hmm. and be imperfect yourself. And how do we make amends after that? So there's really teaching opportunities in the bad stuff, what we consider bad stuff and those guilty moments as well.
Absolutely. We as parents also, we give a lot of love to our kids, but it's not just love that's enough for right. them, right? They need more than that. So what would you suggest to parents?
We like to think love is enough because we have lots of it. And certainly we have the best intentions for our kids, but love can only go so far. What we all need as human beings under everything else is a sense of connection and trust and acceptance. And so when our kids feel like you really see them for who they are, faults and all, they're loved through that no matter what, when kids feel that, they are then inspired to cooperate. There's no reason, they don't feel any disconnection for you. They don't need to feel like they need your attention or they need to exude their power over you. Mm-hmm. So the connection piece is really, really important and we all need it as human beings.
There are so many parenting strategies all over the place online. You'll find tons of them. So how do you know what's right? Because that's a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. Like you Google and there's tons that come out. So how do we know which one works?
There's tons out there and there's lots that are in conflict with one another. Mm-hmm. I'll defer back to my website and company name, Think, Feel, Decide. So that is really the decision-making process that I try to encourage parents to use and I use myself. So you can Google, you can ask friends, really think about what strategies might be an option. Mm-hmm. And then you need to go internally and feel which one make sense for you and your family because you know your kids better than anybody else in the world. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, you have your values, your own sense of family values. So you need to sit with those and feel which strategies are going to make sense mm-hmm. for your family. And then you decide based on that. And really, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to get it right. Mm-hmm. But what's right in this moment may not be what's right, you know, even a week from now or 2 months from now or 5 years from now. And if you get it wrong or if it's not working, you can always change or switch things up. Like it's not rocket science. It's not exact. It's constantly evolving. And if you get it wrong, you just change your strategy.
Mm-hmm. Our child, they have mood swings too. Mm-hmm. And they are all over the spectrum when they're upset. And certain times words come out from their mouth that we as parents find it hard to digest, right? And strong words like, I hate you, mom.
Yes.
Or I hate you, dad.
Yes.
How does one look past that?
I'm going to give you an example of my daughter. She started saying, "I hate you," pretty much as soon as she entered JK. "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you," or "I hate you, you're so bad and mean." And she would say it with such vengeance and just like anger. And I was really triggered by that, because that is something that you should not be saying. And that is like, I have my certainly strong views, and I was really triggered by that. One day, she was trying different languages too. So one day she said, "Mommy, you're an ooh-la-la." And she said it with that same vigor that she said, "I hate you," but it was funny because it made no sense to me. So I was quite taken aback and confused, and then almost burst out laughing. And of course, she never used that term again because it didn't get the effect that she wanted. But what that helped me understand was hate to her doesn't mean the same thing as hate to me. So all she's saying when she says, "I hate you," or "you're an ooh la la," is that she's upset and she's struggling with something and hurting. So that I try to remind myself of that as she will still use it on occasion. I try to remember that, okay, that is just her way of saying, "I'm hurt, I'm struggling, I have big feelings, I don't know how to express in any other way, and I really desperately want your attention right now." So that her calling me an ooh la la was a very aha moment for me.
And even going out to the grocery stores or anywhere else with children these days, it's a struggle because there's so much out there. There's aisles of junk food. And again, the mood plays a big role there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, how does one educate and talk to kids about junk food and what's okay, what's not okay? How early to start? I know very early on, kids are told, okay, junk food is this, healthy food is this, but there's that part of temptation that plays in too. So how does one balance that?
So what I do is I really try to lead by example. So if I'm having ice cream, then chances are my kids, like if I'm doing something like eating junk food in front of my kids, or then they're going to want it. So we don't have necessarily a hard boundary of no junk food, but certainly like the majority of our snacks and the majority of our meals are healthy, and we really try to lead by example. When we do have something like, or when my kids have something like a cookie and then they're on a sugar high after, it's really kind of, we take the approach of curiosity, like, "Oh, interesting how we had a cookie, we had sugar, and now we're running all over like crazy, and then we sort of crashed after." So, and you might not do it in the midst of their craziness because
they will not listen.
But taking that curiosity approach and starting to make the connection between what we eat and how we feel in our body, that's been my approach, and it's learning. So they start to recognize it too as you sort of have those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Now that school's back.
Yes.
And there's a lot of challenges there to get the routine going. And they come back again, they're still in the summer holiday mode. So what is the advice you would give parents to kind of ease into that gradually and give the kids the time and space they need? Because back to school is a huge...
it's a huge shift.
And I find that too with my kids. Getting them back to bedtime routines, which we started quite early on before school started. So, you know, they get in the groove. But still, some days... it's a challenge.
It is. And I would say there's like anything parenting, there's no exact science to this. Mm-hmm. Certainly keeping the routines consistent and starting, you can start before, you can start, you know, as school's starting, but your morning and bedtime routines do in a consistent order every day. And if you're really struggling and want to involve your kids, creating a routine chart with them, these five things need to be done. What order would you like to do them in? And then they know what to expect then. Mm-hmm. So the more we can keep form a habit, the more they'll do it on autopilot over time. Mm-hmm. But the first few weeks are going to be rough because they're used to staying up later. They're used mm-hmm. to having more, I'll say, freedom to play and just be. Mm-hmm. And now they're in more of a structured environment. So you're probably going to see a lot more higher emotions, especially in that after school dinner hour, because they've just, you know, they're learning something completely different at school. They're in a new routine, new class, new teachers, and in more of a structured environment. They're keeping their, you know, they're trying to be good little boys and girls, and they're bottling up some of their emotions because they don't feel comfortable to express them at school. So when they get home and mommy is there and they're super comfortable with mommy, it all comes out.
It does. So. And how does peer pressure, because they're back at school, so carry that home too, the pressure that they have surrounded at school. So as parents, how does one tackle that? Because there's that sassy attitude that comes out sometimes. I'm like, oh my goodness, you were fine in the summertime. What just happened?
Yes, and it comes back really quick.
It does.
Yeah. Validating feelings and curiosity are my two favorite tools to use. So if they have the sassy attitude, or they might be telling you something kind of like in that I hate you scenario of like, okay, they're, you know, they want to have power in this moment, or they want, you know, or maybe they're just trying on something new.
True.
But if it's emotion, if you suspect there's an emotion there, you can say, oh, you know, I can see that you're really struggling right now, or maybe you're feeling powerless, or you want some control over this, or whatever it is. And trying to validate, label a feeling and validate it with them. And then, and in moments of calmness, I find right before bed is a good one with my kids. Get curious about what happened. So if there's some sort of behavior or outburst or something that's come up, or maybe they're, you know, experiencing that peer pressure, that that sassy attitude at school, and now they're trying it out on their sibling. get curious about it. Ask them, hey, like, I noticed this happened. That was new for you. What was going on there? Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, did something happen at school today? Or so just get really curious about it and try not to judge their answers.
Sure. We'll have to give that a try. So transitioning into parenthood and motherhood itself, from, you know, not having kids and suddenly you're, you know, welcoming this new member into your family, the whole task can be overwhelming for new parents. So how does one say it's okay to slow down at that time, even before we, you know, reach the stage of schooling here?
Yeah.
That itself, a lot of them go through a lot of emotions and it can take a toll.
Mm-hmm. I was certainly one of those mothers. I felt like I had a big breakdown in the first few months my daughter was born. I remember thinking of it as if someone took my whole being and threw it on the floor and shattered it, and I had to sort of build it back up with the little pieces into a new version of myself. And I found that the more I resist the slowing down and the change, the more it hurts. The more I get the reminders or the harsh lessons that I do need to slow down. It is very easy to get caught up in everything we should be doing as parents because we want to do it well. We miss our old selves in many ways. The slowing down, I have found, it's great for our kids, but it's great for us in terms of getting to know ourselves better and keeping our mental sanity.
And having the right support helps too.
Yes.
Be it your partner, be it the community, or just your friends and family.
And having other friends who are moms with even kids around the same age has been one of the biggest things or biggest helps for me, because it sort of helps you realize that the craziness is your norm, and it's, you know, even though you're struggling, everybody is struggling.
Absolutely. What, according to you, is the best piece of parenting advice or to eliminate worry, keep cool, or even get that stress and anxiety out? What would you tell our listeners?
Recognizing that worry is your imagination thinking about the worst possible scenarios. So if you can redirect your imagination to think of something that gives you a different emotion, and so the goal would not be to, you know, be really stressed and worried about something and to suddenly be like, oh, this is going to be the best thing ever. Mm-hmm. Your goal is to find a thought that gives you a little bit of relief, a little bit of that feeling of relaxation in your body that you can just, you know, take it as far as you can go to feel better. And then that's your new thought of this situation. And then slowly move along that emotional scale until it feels better. But your thoughts are very, very powerful, and becoming conscious about your thoughts and what you're telling yourself and how you're looking at the situation that you're dealing with can really, really help.
Mm-hmm. So if people need to find you and read more about what you do, where can mm-hmm. they reach out?
My website is the best place, thinkfeeldecide.com. Mm-hmm. I have a little mini course there. If you sign up for that, you'll get my weekly emails, and I'll let you know whatever's going on. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook, Lindsay Think Feel Decide on Instagram, and Facebook is Think Feel Decide as well.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Lindsay. Okay. It's been a pleasure having you in studio today, and that was a lot of great ideas you shared. Hopefully our listeners are listening well enough to, you know, implement those as soon as they have the kids, you know, wake up probably by now. So thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can even listen online on www.radiowaterloo.ca at 9 a.m. every Saturday. If you have a story or want to share it, you can email me at onairwithrashmi@gmail.com, or you can follow me on my Facebook page in Conversation with Rashmi, or my Instagram feed at RASHSANJ. Until then, have a wonderful weekend, and thank you for listening in Conversation with Rashmi.